Great go. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the new term. I've got a couple of people here at Binus. So good to see you. Welcome to all those on Zoom. So for this term, as just to make it clear, we are at Binus for those that want. For those that are comfortable to remain on Zoom, we are still at Zoom. We're going to do, I think, an interesting series this term based on the wisdom of King Solomon. King Solomon, as you know, was known as the wisest of all men, who taught a lot of wisdom, which today we'd refer to, I suppose, as ancient wisdom, but still very applicable and perhaps particularly applicable to nowadays. As you know, I'm always very passionate about this idea of taking ancient wisdom and applying it to the modern world. And it's particularly in line with a very, very Jewish principle. And the Jewish principle is based on what the Zohar tells us. Come in. The Zohar tells us that istakel be'oraita ubara alma. That when God created the world, the story that we just read about a couple of weeks ago in the Parsha, Genesis, we've now just begun the new cycle of Torah reading. So the story of Genesis is the creation of the world, but the Zohar says that when God created the world, the Torah preceded the world, transcended the world. And God looked into the Torah and created the world. What that means is, a separate discussion to understand what does it mean that Torah came before the world, but we'll leave that for now. But what it does mean is that the Torah's teachings, God's teachings, is like a blueprint of creation. What that means is that the fundamental principle in Judaism is that the ethics, the values of the teachings that the Torah teaches us are not a response to a society that already exists, but it's the other way around. The society or the world is an outcome of those values, right? Looking at Torah as a blueprint, as an architectural blueprint of the world. Which means, and that's why this is so fundamental in terms of Jewish thinking, it means that those values, that wisdom that comes with the Torah, and particularly that wisdom we're going to talk about in terms of day-to-day living and character development and character building and so on, that the Torah teaches are eternal. So that's why fundamental Jewish thinking is the eternity of Torah's teachings, right? We say the Torah is eternal. That's one of the fundamentals of Orthodox Judaism, is that Torah is eternal. But the reason that it's eternal is because it wasn't given for one particular culture, one particular time, or one particular society. Anything that exists in the physical world must fit into Torah, because it wouldn't have been created without being the outcome of Torah's teachings. So that's the idea. So, as I said, that's particularly relevant, I think, to when we talk about the teachings of King Solomon, whose lessons are often, in fact, his lessons in many of his books that he wrote three particular books, we'll talk about them in a moment, are layered. They're often very spiritual, which are important lessons, but at the same time are understood and are applied and can be applied to just regular living and regular relationships and regular sort of how we go about our regular life. Which is not in contradiction with the spiritual aspect of it. In other words, in Torah, it's all one thing. Value-based living encompasses everything. But they're very, very relevant on a practical level. So today what I want to do is, I'm going to look mainly at the book of Proverbs. That's one of the three books that King Solomon wrote. Mishlei, it's called in Hebrew. It's called Proverbs because he gives a lot of analogies and examples and so on and so forth. But it really applies to all of his books, but we're going to have a look particularly at the book of Mishlei. But what I wanted to do is just give an introduction today to how King Solomon came, so to speak, to those teachings. And that introduction is important, not just from a historic point of view, but as a foundational principle or principles to the wisdom that we're going to discuss. Right? So, King David, we know, was the, just to give a little bit of history. So King David, we know, was the first king anointed by God as the head of the Davidic dynasty, which then became an eternal dynasty. As we know, the Torah tells us that You know, as we say, the famous song, David Melech Israel Chai V'Kayam, King David is eternal. What that means is his kingdom is eternal and his descendants are eternal, and therefore Mashiach, ultimately, in Jewish belief, is a descendant of King David. King David passed away when he was 70. The prophecy was that King Solomon would be anointed as the next king. King Solomon was very young at that time. And God appears to King Solomon and says to him, you know that I loved your father, King David. King David was very beloved by God, as we see in Tanakh, and we see in Tehillim, and we see in all the stories that are told in Tanakh. And you have now taken him over. You are his successor. So God says to him, what do you want? Ask, what do you want? You have your chance now is to ask from me in order to make sure that your kingdom and your leadership is successful. Here's your opportunity for a request. All right? So King Solomon, as young as he was, nevertheless, he launches into this whole introduction by saying to God, you know, you've done a great kindness to your servant, David, my father. You've chosen the Jewish nation, and so on and so forth. But then he says, you've chosen me as the king, and I have only one request. And he says, may you grant your servant, referring to himself, an understanding heart to judge your... Actually, the translation understanding heart is not 100% accurate, and I'm going to explain why in a moment. To judge your people, to distinguish between good and evil, who can judge this formidable people of yours, the nation of Israel. Now, the exact wording in Hebrew, very interesting, we're going to go into this a bit in a few moments. He asks God for a lev shomea. Lev shomea, sorry? A heart that understands or listens. But the word shema, as we know, not only to listen, it's to absorb and to understand and internalize, right? And that's how God responds. He asks for a heart. Now, it's interesting because we're going to talk a little bit about the usage of the word heart when it comes to understanding. Right? We know that the head is the seat of knowledge and the heart is a seat of emotions, as we've always talked about, right? But he says he wants a heart shomer, a listening heart, an attentive heart, an understanding heart, to understand lehavin, which is intellect, to understand ben tov lera, between good and bad. Now, before we go to get God's response, this request in itself was amazing. You know, as we see in the world, there are people who are filled with gifts. It could be material gifts, it could be talents, even brilliant sometimes, and they're a complete failure. Why? Because if there's one thing that's a foundation to applying and to the effective usage of any of the gifts that God gives us, it's this idea of wisdom. Now, when I say wisdom, I'm not talking about academic intellect. Important also. Knowledge is important, very important. Understanding, knowing what is good, knowing what is bad. But as we're going to see, what King Shlomo HaMelech was really asking for was not to be knowledgeable, he was asking to be wise. Very different. Wise means a nuanced type of wisdom, ability to discern, to tell the difference between one person and another, between one situation and another. Right? And that's what he asks for. And the brilliance of that is, because that King Solomon understood what we all need to understand, that without that gift of chokhmah, without that gift of being wise, and wise is something that anyone could be, not everyone could be brilliant, right? Because there are different levels of intellect, that's the fact, right? Not everyone's an Einstein, but one can, hopefully, if one's open to it, develop a certain degree of wisdom, which we'll talk about what that means, and that is the foundation to everything. It's the foundation to the choices that we make, to the responses that we give to other people, to the decisions that we make in one situation which might differ to a decision we make in a different situation, to how we connect to one person differently to the way we connect to another person. All of that is a foundation. Other than that, it just doesn't work, right? And it's like a great tragedy. I mean, you see people that are amazingly talented and yet are way underachieving or completely not successful, years behind people who are much less brilliant, but are much more wise. Right? And that's what King Solomon asked for. And the brilliance of King Solomon is that he knew what to ask for. That's in itself a gift, I suppose. To know what to ask for. And God is extremely happy with that. Extremely. And he says the following. He told King Solomon the following. Because you asked for wisdom, instead of longevity, instead of wealth, instead of power over your enemies, all the different things that King Solomon could have asked for. So God gave him everything, but primarily he gave him wisdom first, and then he gave him all the other blessings as well. As we know, that King Solomon turned out to be one of the most powerful kings. He was one of the few kings in history, according to the Talmud, that ruled over the entire populated area of the world at the time. And it was a glorious period. It went sour towards the end a little bit, and then from then the kingdom split and it was Cyrus. But during his time, it was one of the most glorious periods of Jewish history. Peace. In fact, King Shlomo, his name is peace. That comes from the word shalom, right? Amazing peace, tremendous spiritual awareness and spiritual consciousness. He built the temple, and it was just the most amazing time in Jewish history. In fact, according to Kabbalah, just to put that in, not that it's relevant to the discussion, but it's interesting, according to Kabbalah, King Solomon's era was a preview to Mashiach, but it was temporary, but nevertheless it was a preview to what will happen when Mashiach comes. And also, just as an interesting point of knowledge, from Abraham, which is this week's parasha, the beginning of the Jewish nation really, King Solomon is the 15th generation, right? What's the significance of that? Number one, 15 is the name of Hashem, Yud and He, right? And second of all, we know that the 15th of each month represents the perfection of the Jewish people, because the Jewish people are compared to the moon. It's called in Aramaic, Kaima Sihara Ba'ashlamuta. There's a perfect moon, there's a whole moon, and that moon comes to fruition on the 15th of the month. King Solomon was the 15th generation from Abraham, and that resembled a certain era of perfection and an era of wholeness for the Jewish people. Okay. So what does God say to him? God responds, and it's very important to look at the Hebrew words here, because God responds very much the way King Solomon asked, but with a bit of modification, and he tells him the formula. And he said, therefore, I'm going to give you, and I'm going to tell you the Hebrew first, I'm going to give you, again, use the word heart, lev chacham v'navon. A heart, the way I translate it here, a wise and understanding heart. But look at the words he uses. First, he uses the word lev, a heart, again, the concept of heart, right? Chacham v'navon. Chacham v'navon is... which two words is it? Chochmah and Bina. Right? So, Lev Chacham means the Lev of Chochmah. Navon is the same word as Bina, just an understanding heart, which is the same root as the word Bina. Right? And of course, as we know, that's the basis for what we now know to be this concept that King Solomon was known as the Chacham Mikol Adam, the wisest of all men. Right? So let's break this down, this concept of lev being an understanding heart and chacham v'navon. And both things, the idea of heart and the idea of chacham and navon, that combination of chochmah and bina. So what is that all about? So first of all, we know the following. This is the principle. The principle goes like this. Even though we normally attribute intellect and wisdom to the brain and emotion to the heart. But what we know is the following. We know that for any leadership position to be successful, right? Or for any form of growth to be successful, for any form of personal development to begin, right? There needs to be a number of things. First of all, knowledge is extremely important. So of course we start from the head, right? Without learning, without educating, without knowing what is important or what isn't important, what are values or what are not values, what is superficial and what is internal, what is important, what is not important. It starts with study, starts with learning, right? We start with the Torah's principles, the ethics, the morals, and so on and so forth. However, that wisdom needs to be applied. And to apply that wisdom, you need something different, as I said before. You need like a nuanced approach. You need what we call in Hebrew, I'm not exactly the English translation, we call in Hebrew the idea of hafchana, which means discernment, right? To be able to tell the difference between one person and another, to be able to understand the difference in one situation and another. The ability to read an audience, to read the other person, to read the situation, to understand what the situation calls for. That this situation calls for this response, that situation calls for a different response. All within the guidelines and the values that we taught, but nevertheless different, modified, applied differently, and so forth. Right? For that you need the wisdom and the knowledge to begin with the head, but to be expressed through the heart. And that's the concept of the lave, right? Now, we find this before. And this is a very interesting idea. We find this in the Chumash. Where do we find it? We find it in the building of the Mishkan. Right? When the Jews were asked to build the Mishkan in the desert, it was a nation that just came out of Egypt. Slaves, not particularly skilled people, but some very bright people. And God told Moses that he wants him to appoint a team that will be led by a person called Bezalel, who was like the project manager of building the Mishkan, who incidentally was 13 years old at the time.
13.
Yeah. Very talented. I just saw on social media the other day something about a report of a 16-year-old that built his own business and just sold it for a few million dollars.
He was 13.
A 13? Oh, okay. Well, there you are. You see? See, even nowadays, you can have a smart 13-year-old. You see, there we are. Anyway, but Saul was 13-year-old at the time, and a team under him, building the Mishkan. And God tells Moshe Rabbeinu to appoint certain types of people who will be skilled in the art and the skills necessary, the talents necessary to understand the instructions and understand the, and also to have the talent to be able to design the Mishkan the way it needed to be designed properly. And he uses the word Chochmah, God used the word Chochmah, but he said, he tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to appoint Chachmei Lev. Same idea. Right? Why? The wise of the heart. Same language. So this concept is even before King Solomon. The wise of the heart, Chachmei Lev. And what is Chachmei Lev? As I said before, wisdom begins in the head but needs to be expressed in the heart. And why is that? So I want to share with you two reasons. One is, comes from the Netziv. The Netziv was a great commentator on the Chumash, a great Torah scholar in general, known as Reb Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. He was 19th century. He was born 1816 and passed away 1893. He was the famous head of the yeshiva in Volozhin. I'm not sure exactly the history, but one of his descendants started Bar Ilan University, which is why it's called Bar Ilan. Berlin, his name is Berlin. Yeah. And he says the following. I didn't see it inside. It's quoted by someone who wrote an article on the Parsha where this Chachmei Lev concept is brought up. And the reason why I say I didn't see it in the Netziv, because in the article, the author of the article references Carol Dweck. I don't think the Netziv referenced Carol Dweck, but... So it's his own addition to the explanation. So he says that Netziv offers the following explanation, and he bases it, he references the idea of Carol Dweck, which we've talked about many times, which is the idea of the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset, right? And that concept, I'll bring it in the same way because it's a nice way to do it. So we know that in Carol Dweck's work, she talks about the key indicator to success, right, of children particularly, and that was a study was around children, where it wasn't about the talent that they have. So someone can be born with brilliant talents in terms of learning or any other area of life, and yet can fall into the trap of having a fixed mindset, right? Why? Because they lack the ability of grit, determination, which comes obviously from the belief that you can do it, right? And that you can grow, and that you are not defined, even if you have brilliant talents, but at the end of the day, all human talents are limited, right? All human talents are defined. The idea is, and if you stick with them and you don't have the growth mindset, as Carol Dweck explains it, then you stick with the talents you were given, but you define yourself by them and you get stuck within the parameters of your specific level of talent or ability, right? And therefore, her whole thesis was based that, and some kids have more naturally than others, but obviously her point was to instill in kids this ability to move from those that are born in the fixed mindset, to move from the fixed mindset into the growth mindset, not to define yourself by your talents, not to define yourself by the things you think you can do, the things you can't do, but to define yourself by your infinite potential going much far beyond yourself, a part of you that's undefined and be able to grow that much more. So the Netziv says, moving away from Carol Dweck, back to the Netziv, the Netziv says the following. He says, because while God might have granted these individuals chokhmah, the raw talent and ability to successfully complete the tasks assigned to them, they needed something different to participate in the Mishkan project. Why? Because he says these were a people who just came out of Egypt. These were a bashed up people. These were a broken people, right? Who, without something other than just their raw talent, would never succeed. Because they never believed that they could. They wouldn't have the growth mindset, as the article refers to it as, right? And therefore, he says the key importance that you need with these people is they have to be chachmei lev, which means that their wisdom they have in their head must be felt in their heart. They must believe in it. They must really think they can do it and grow with it and extend it and expand on it. Those are the people that you need to be able to build a Mishkan. Which fits, I guess, very well into Shlomo HaMelech, who was very young at the time when his father, King David, died. In fact, according to the way that Tanakh explains it, he was even younger than Metzal. He was only 12 at the time, right? He was crowned as king at 12 years old. Obviously, a very mature and brilliant 12 years old, because by the very fact that he knew God what to ask, he knew what to ask from God, was already a sign of who he was. But God said, I'm going to give you a lev chacham benavon. The heart. In other words, not just that you'll have a brilliant mind, but you'll feel it. And you'll feel that you can use it. And you'll feel that you can use it to the benefit of your growing and your successful leadership and how to apply it and how to extend it and how to connect it to people and to situations and to the judgments that you will have to make and the decisions you're going to have to take in your leadership as king. Right? So that's the first idea of why you need a lev chacham. It needs to be the confidence in your heart. It's not enough just to have it in your head. We know that there are many, many brilliant people and yet can't apply it because they don't have that belief. They don't have the determination. So the things that come with applying the wisdom that we have, going back to Carol Dweck's work of the stuff she talks about, the grit and the determination and the self-esteem or the belief in oneself, that's all heart stuff. That's not head stuff. I mean, yes, it's processed through the head, of course, but it's what you feel inside. It's what you feel you are. It's how you define yourself. Your personality. Personality and self feelings are all stuff that lives in the heart, that lives in the emotional part of the person, not the intellectual part of the person. Yeah? So that's the first idea. The second idea is this concept of the wisdom being expressed through the heart. So we know that in the last number of decades, there's a lot of work done and a lot of literature that has emerged on the concept of emotional intelligence, right? Emotional intelligence is often defined as the ability to perceive things properly, to handle and manage emotions, and one particular emotion that EQ or EI, whatever, is always associated with is the concept of empathy, right? And we know that, I mean, the studies that have been done over the last, whatever, is it 50 years, is the idea of is the studies that show that people with higher emotional intelligence are much more successful. They much more successful in have greater mental health, job performance, leadership skills, relationships, and so on and so forth, right? Now, if you look in, it's one of these things which I love, you know, it's one of my pet subjects, this, right, about things that people think they've discovered nowadays, right? Which has been around since the Torah was given, right? So if you look in the modern literature, they'll tell you that the term emotional strength first surfaced by a guy called Abraham Maslow in the 1950s, and the term emotional intelligence is actually later, I think in the 80s or the 90s, right? Obviously, that's not true. Chacham Lev, when God asked Moses to appoint people who were Chachme Lev, is exactly that. It's emotional, it's intelligence, but it's emotional intelligence. Now, what does that mean, right? Now, obviously, it means intelligence also. We talk when you say the word intelligence, in fact, there's been, in the modern literature, there's some discussion about the association between the word intelligence and the word emotional, right? Not everyone's so happy about that. But the truth is that it is a correct association, because that's exactly the point. Chacham Lev is, Chacham is intelligence, intellect, but Chacham Lev is emotional intelligence, right? Now, what does that mean? The basic idea behind it is as follows, that the use of wisdom can only work when wisdom is not detached, right? And that's something we spoke about many times. Because wisdom and intellect, by definition, is detached. Because that's the power of intellect. The power of intellect is to understand and to process something that's not you, that you can take from somewhere else, that you can take from the outside, that you can be objective with, right? That is what intellect is. That's why it starts in the head. Because pure intelligence, pure intellect, is about absorbing something that's detached. It's the ability to detach. It's the ability to stand back and to understand something. It's the ability to surrender to or even process something that is not me. And it works in two levels, as also we talk about Chochmah and Binah. But yeah.
Subjective.
Not subjective.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Right, objective.
Right. Not to be subjective, exactly. And the ability to be purely objective, right? As we know, there can be many, many things which are sometimes even true, but can be two truths coming from a different perspective. As we find in the Talmud, even in the Torah learning, which has to be based on certain axiomatic truths, we can have different outcomes, like Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel and so on and so forth, right? Because intellect, our head, gives us the ability to look at something differently. It's the power of the mind to unlock and not to be trapped. But as we've spoken about many, many times, it is the very greatness of the mind that it's down, that's its downfall. Because it's detached and therefore it remains detached. So its strength is that it's detached, its weakness is that it's detached. The greatness of, I would call, ancient biblical emotional intelligence is the ability to take what you've learned, to take what you've studied, to take what you've understood, to take what you've been ready to listen to and to absorb from the outside and express it through you, to express it through your heart. Right? To make it something that is you, and make it something through which you can connect to. Connect to the idea, connect to the value, connect to other people, connect to experiences, connect it to situations. Right? In other words, the ideas that you learn and the ideas that you are prepared to entertain and to process have to be something that have to become you, which can only happen, number one, if you remove the ego. Often, what goes on in the mind doesn't come to the heart because the heart is blocked by self-absorption, by egocentricity, and therefore it's all very good if it's in theory, but don't bother me kind of thing, right? Understand? I'll give a lecture on it. I'll tell you how important it is, and I'll be able to describe it. But as we say in Yiddish, mishach nishtarayim, right? Don't mix into my affairs. My meaning the heart, right? As we talk about many times, the personality of a person is not the head. The personality of a person is the heart. That's what you tell a person. Not by his or her head, but by his or her heart. Right? So that ego has to be removed. That's a lifelong mission sometimes. Right? To be ready to let the ideas into my heart so they become me. And it becomes and it it's also about letting the ideas merge with heart concepts like empathy, like consideration for others, like connection with others. That's an ultimate connection. That's an ultimate combination. That's why empathy in EQ is such an important thing, because I can be brilliant, but I can mess up a relationship because I'm not in the other person's world. I'm still in my world. It's nice that I understand these brilliant things in my head, but I'm not in the other person's world, which you can only be, you can't be through the mind. The mind guides you. The mind helps you understand the other person's world, but it's the heart, it's the empathy, it's the feeling, it's the connection with other people and with other things, with other situations that allow you to connect, allow you to have empathy, allow you then to read and to understand and to discern what you are connecting with and what you are applying your wisdom to, which changes the whole roadmap. It changes everything. Change your decision making. It doesn't change your truth. See, this is an important thing to understand. We're not talking about changing your truth. The mind has to be the guide. And if I learn and understand certain values to which I subscribe and to which I commit and which I believe in, those values will remain. It's how you apply the values. It's how you decide what to say and when to say. I mean, a simple example, right? A very, very simple example to what I'm saying about values. Is there's a pasuk, there's a verse in the Torah which is a value, it's a mitzvah actually. Hocheach tocheach et amitecha, you shall admonish, that's a long strong word, reprimand your fellow. Meaning we have a spiritual responsibility to each other, that if we see someone doing something wrong, we have to reprimand, right? That's a value, and that's a value which is eternal. Now, some people are very bad at this, meaning not bad at that they don't do it, but they're bad at messing it up every time they do it. Right? Why? Because they're not chacham leiv. Right? The Talmud tells us that, first of all, you have to read your audience. Know how to reprimand. Know, is it the right person? Is it the right time? Is it the right place? Is it the right situation? And the Talmud says very clearly that just like it's a mitzvah, it's a real mitzvah, to tell someone something that they're going to listen to, it's a mitzvah not to tell them if they're not going to listen to it. Right? If I see someone doing something that's really bad, and I just know the situation. I know if I walk over to them and tell them they're doing something wrong, I'm just going to blow up in my face. Not that I'm worried about myself, but even just I want to achieve what I'm trying to achieve. So as I tell them, it's a mitzvah not to tell them. Right? I once heard a funny story about, I don't know who it was. It was one of the great rabbis in some shtetl that he was, I don't know, he was collecting, I think, or he needed help for something. And he was obviously a bit of a sharp guy, but there's one person that he thought had the means or had the resources to help, but that person was known as a terrible miser, not interested in all that. So he says he wants to go visit him anyways. So he went to visit him, and the guy was respectful, invited him in, offered him a cup of tea, and he sits down, and he doesn't say anything. Sits there for like 5-10 minutes, drinks his tea, and he says, Shkoyach, thank you very much, gets up, and he's about to leave. And he says, Rabbi, you must have come for something, right? So he told him, I'll be honest, I came actually to perform a mitzvah. He says, which mitzvah you perform? He says, the mitzvah is, the Talmud says, just like it's a mitzvah to tell someone something that they listen to, it's a mitzvah to hold yourself back and not talk when you know you're not going to be listened to. So I never had that opportunity. So I wanted to have the opportunity to perform the mitzvah. He obviously knew it would work. So obviously he didn't mark and it worked. But okay, this is a funny story. but that's the concept, right? So what does that mean? So does that mean the value suddenly disappears? No, of course not. The value, the idea of social responsibility or inspiring others or influencing others or fixing others when they're doing the wrong thing still remains. It's the heart, the emotional intelligence that then, I'm giving a very simple example because it's an obvious one. Obviously, most of life is much more complicated than this, but it's the reading the situation, it's understanding, it's connecting to the other person's world, it's connecting to the situation and the timing and understanding it and the nuances of it, etc., etc., that will help you apply that value or not apply it now and look for other ways to apply it when it's more appropriate. So the value doesn't change. The mind is the guiding force. The learning, the knowledge is the guiding force, but it's the chacham lev. It's got to come through the heart. with empathy, with understanding, with discernment, and so on and so forth. Which ties into something else. It ties into the next two words that God says to Shlomo HaMelech, that I'm going to bless you with a lev chacham v'navon. The heart, you're going to be able to express your knowledge through the heart. And I'm going to give you chacham v'navon. You'll have a heart of chokhmah and bina. Right? Because the pathway to letting knowledge and the head flow through the heart and be expressed through the heart is putting the knowledge, even when it's in the head, even when it's in the mind, through the process of chokhmah and bina. Why? And this is something obviously we've discussed many times, but let's just summarize it. We know that the first two stages of understanding anything is chokhmah and bina, right? What's the difference between chokhmah and bina? So chokhmah and bina are the two first stages of understanding a concept. And if you want to understand something properly, it requires, critically needs, requires these two stages, right? We are taught, so normally we say chokhmah is the idea, the conception of the idea, the creation of the idea, and bina is the building of the idea. That's why bina comes to the word binyan, right? We've talked about this before. So when you get like a flashlight, the aha moment, I get it, that's the chokhmah, but it's very underdeveloped and it'll dissipate if you don't do something with it. Bina is developing it, analyzing it, and really internalizing it. But it's much deeper than that. Why is it deeper than that? So it goes like this. When a person learns, when a person understands, it can be even an intellectual subject, academic subject, right? If you really want to be knowledgeable and understand things properly, you have to be committed to understanding with truth. Those who understand a little bit of Yiddish would know that there's an expression in Yiddish called a krummekop, right? A krummekop means a crooked head. What is the, so you know, Yiddish have these beautiful expressions of, and they're not always complimentary, of understanding people. I think Yiddish does this the best, by the way. We're supposed to be a refined people with a refined language, but sometimes Yiddish expressions are. So what's a krummekop? Krummekop means someone who's very clever and doesn't get anything right. Why not? Why not get anything right? Because to understand something properly, you have to have a straight head. Just to break it down and understand it more in depth, what's the difference between a straight head and a crooked head? A straight head means someone who's committed to the truth. In other words, he's not coming to open the book or to open the concept or to listen to the class with preconceived ideas, and therefore just wants to understand it. He's looking just for a way to validate their own preconceived notions, and therefore doesn't learn anything. Just learns, has more material to enforce the crookedness of their own head or the untruth of their own head, and just has amassed more knowledge in that direction, but doesn't really understand anything and doesn't really grow. Right?
Cognitive bias,
exactly. Right? Complete cognitive bias. Now, in order to make sure we don't have cognitive bias, the process is surrendering. Surrendering to a truth. Hearing an idea. And that's what chokhmah is, right? Chokhmah is working hard, discovering something new, something foundational, something powerful, something that's a light bulb, something that feels, aha, this is it, and it's completely true, and surrendering to it. To use I'll tell you in a moment, right? That's what chokhmah is. So the initial stage of understanding something requires a surrender. To surrender to something that maybe I don't even understand or I don't even connect to. But I have, for whatever reason, it's true. It rings true. Either it rings true or I'm studying something that I believe to be true, like when we study passages of the Talmud or passages of the Torah, whatever the case is. But I'm surrendering to that truth. Right? The problem with chokhmah is that it's even more detached than normal intellect. Because I'm surrendering to something outside of me, completely outside of me. Right? Which is where bina comes in. Bina means that truth that I surrender to, I want to understand it now. I want to really process it and fully understand it. I don't want to just believe in it. I want to really understand. I want to get it. Right? So I want to process it. I want to analyze it. I want to question it. I want to challenge it even. And get to the answer and fully understand it. So it becomes a fully understood concept. Right? Bina is the first stage where the intellectual idea becomes me. Not in my heart just yet, but it's the beginning stages of how I internalize it and becomes me, something that I understand. Does that make sense? But in order to do that, it's the combination of chachamim. Because we have cognitive bias, as you put it, even when I surrender to a certain truth, but then when I transfer it to my mind and I start to understand it, very often my cognitive bias kicks in again and I distort it. And I land up at the same place that I was before. Right? Growth can only come when I understand it, but I don't lose sight of the Chochmah. There's many places where it's written that in order to understand something properly, you must have the marriage between Chochmah and Bina, which in Kabbalah is called the father and the mother. Right? The father is the conception of the idea, the foundation of the idea. The Bina is the mother, like the female develops the child and goes, but it's all coming out of the original kernel of truth, so to speak. Right? So you have to be committed to both. Which is why in Mishle, I've just brought this as an introduction. So God gives Shlomo HaMelech the blessing. You're going to have lev, you're going to be able to have emotional intelligence, not just intelligence. But it's going to start with the mind. But if it starts with the mind, and if you want to land up in the heart, you have to have lev, a heart, but it's got to be one that's chacham v'navon. You have to go through the process of chachma, where you're willing to be surrendered to truths that are outside of you, but you're also willing to process them and master them and understand them on your own. Right? And in fact, it's interesting, but this is what we say every day in our prayers. If you look in Shacharit, in the morning prayers, there's a prayer we say before Shema, where we turn to God and we say, Avinu Av HaRachaman, our Father, Merciful Father, Rachem Aleinu, have mercy upon us. And then listen to the words. V'sein b'libeinu bina. Put into our heart, bina, not chokhma, bina. Lehavin u'laskil, to understand, to intellectualize. Lilmor, to learn, lelamed, to teach. And then lishmor lekayem, to observe your mitzvot, and so on and so forth. So we don't ask God for a heart, a mind, we're asking for a heart of bina. But it's interesting, we say, assembly beinu bina. Why? Because the connection between the detached wisdom and the heart is bina. And then da'at, as we've talked about many times, which is connecting to it, right? In other words, let me understand, let me process, and let me take that processing to become me, let me remove the ego, let me be able to have the wherewithal to understand and to read audiences and to read other people and to connect and have empathy and all these things that I can make what I understand become part of me and live it and express it through my heart. Right? And that's the foundation and the key to any form of real understanding and any form of successful and effective living and relationships, any form of development and any form of growth. Which ties in, and we're going to finish with this over the next few minutes. Oh, we see, I forgot to say, of course, we see in Shlomo HaMelech's writings, in Mishle, particularly in the beginning, we find the words Chachma and Bina very, very often used. Those are two words we find very often used. The other two words, which are also key, and I'm just saying these are the foundations that King Solomon puts there, is the word Musar and Musar Haskel. Very briefly, Musar is discipline in a more sort of a harsh way, because all of this can only happen when a person is really determined, going back to the grit that Carol Dweck talks about. Very determined and very self-disciplined, because there are lots of things that will always get in the way. Always get in the way, like our own ego, like our own cognitive bias, like our own genders, right? That blockage to go out of our self-absorption requires, and self-interest requires a lot of self-control. As we talked about that famous you know, marshmallow experiment, that one of the key foundations of growth from a very young age is the ability of being disciplined. So that's because all these ideas are very nice. They can all happen and you can feel that in your heart and all that kind of stuff, but you have to be able to apply it. And apply it means sometimes we have to just not say what you want to say. We have to not eat what we don't want to eat. We have to not do what we don't want to do. These things take an amazing amount of discipline. So that we find that word Musar in King Solomon's writings as well. And Musar Haskel, which is a term basically of how to apply the self-discipline and when to apply the self-discipline. Because the antidote to self-discipline is not to be rigid, right? Because sometimes you find that people who are incredibly self-disciplined become very incredibly rigid, which is also not good. So the idea to be self-disciplined, but at the same time to be flexible. And knowing when to apply the self-discipline and when not to apply it, when to apply the ideas and when not to apply the ideas, this is all part of the Lev Chacham Menavon. Which is why King Solomon in the very, very beginning of Proverbs, which is the foundation really to Mishlei, as soon as he gives a few words of introduction, he says a very, very famous verse, which we've talked about once, because, and if you remember, we once did a series on the letter of the Ramban to his son, Nachmanides' letter. And he uses the sentence from Mishlei, we talked about it a lot then. And it's the letter where King Solomon says, Shma b'ni musar avicha, ve'al titosh torat imecha. Listen, my son, Shma. Listen, my son, to the teachings of your father, and do not forsake the instructions of your mother. Now, because this can be, it's a long discussion, it can be understood on many, many different levels. But already there, he's putting in so much. He's saying the foundation to Proverbs, the foundation to this book is, you've got to be ready to learn and to absorb. And what does he say? First of all, Shema. Shema means not just to listen. As we've spoken about many times, Shema means to internalize, to absorb, to really be open to learn. And he says, the instruction, the admonishment of your father and the instruction of your mother. Father and mother, again, is Chochma and Bina. Right? So be ready to learn, be open. Again, removal of ego. Be ready to to learn new things as long as you live. That's the only way you can grow. And absorb them and ultimately make it part of your heart to become a Chacham Lev, right? I read a beautiful thing, one of Rabbi Sachs's articles. He writes, he says that as a chief rabbi, I often visited old age homes. And it was one of those that I met Florence. She was 103 going at 104. Yet she had about her the air of a young woman. She was bright, eager, full of life. Her eyes shone with a delight in being alive. I asked her for the secret of eternal youth. With a smile, she said, never be afraid to learn something new. Right? Beautiful. That's when I discovered that if you are prepared to learn something new, you can be 103 and still young. If you are not prepared to learn something new, you can be 23 and already old. Which, of course, fits into an idea that I once shared with you on one of the ideas of Pirkei Avot in the Ethics of the Fathers. Well, in the Ethics of the Fathers, it says that on the surface sounds like a very discouraging sentence, but it says, Halomet Torah Zaken, that if someone learns Torah when they're old, so it's like writing something on a worn out piece of paper that you've written, it doesn't connect with the paper so well. Halomet Torah Yeled, if you learn Torah when you're young, then it's like writing, putting ink on a fresh piece of paper, right? So the commentary says, that's not very encouraging. I mean, it's great news for the 14-year-olds, but not so good for the people who are, you know, a little bit older, right? Where you almost want to give up, so then why bother? But the Lubavitcher Rebbe once explains, that's not what it means. It means like this, Salamet Torah Zaken, if you learn Torah no matter what age you are, but you like an old person, you say, I know everything already, I've experienced it all, I know it all already, right? Then nothing connects. But Halamet Torah, if you learn Torah, it doesn't matter how old you are, but you learn it like a yeled, you learn it like a child who's always open and curious and thirsty for knowledge and always open to learn something new, then it's like ink on a fresh piece of paper. It will stick, it will help you, it will be effective, and you'll grow from it, right? But Sachs also says, the Times once interviewed a distinguished member of the Jewish community on his 92nd birthday. The interviewer said, most people, when they reach the age of 92, begin to slow down. You seem to be speeding up. Why? So he replied, and he said, you get to the age of 92, you see the door begin to close. I have so much to do before the door closes that the older I get, the harder I have to work. Right? He says, that is the recipe for arichut yamim. He says, the recipe for a long life. So that's the concept. The concept is, part of being wise, and that's what Pirkei Avot tells us, or the Talmud tells us. Ezeh Chacham, who is a really wise person, Halomed Mikol Adam, someone who can learn from others. So therefore, putting this all together, what's the formula? What's the foundation of all the teachings that we're going to go through, or that King Solomon goes through in the book of Proverbs, some of which we're going to explore over the coming weeks, right? What is the secret? The secret is Shmabani, to be open to learn, number one. Never to be fixed, never to say I've arrived. Doesn't matter how old we are, to be always open to learn and to listen to new ideas, new strategies, new concepts, new perspectives. Obviously, to be committed to a set of values and a set of belief systems, but within that, there is so much to learn and to explore. And then to pray to God and to work on it ourselves, not only to have knowledge, not only to have chokhmah, but also bina, and not only to have intellect in our mind, but to have a lev chacham v'navon, to let it become part of, to develop EQ, develop emotional intelligence, which was the Torah's idea to begin with, right? Long before 1950. to be able to have that emotional connection, to marry the mind with the heart, and only then can we truly grow, because only then we can really understand and discern and to apply and to really understand how to grow, in what way to grow, how to go beyond ourselves, and how to apply it properly. So that's the foundation, and over the next few weeks, we will explore some of the teachings of Mishnah. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Yep. I'm not familiar with the word navon.
Same word as bina. Navon means just like a heart. Same word as bina. Bina is a noun.
Really?
Lev navon means understanding heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you where we do find it. In the Haggadah. You know, in the very beginning of the Haggadah, where we say that even if we're very wise, we still need to tell the story of the first paragraph after Manishtana. We say that v'afilu even kulanu chachamim, even if we're all wise, or kulanu navonim. Same word as navon. But still, it's a mitzvah to tell the story. That's right. Well, it's a surname. That's correct. That's right.